Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Cup of Coffee with me, your host, Tom Dillon. This has been recorded live at our weekly online meeting and broadcast around the world, except it's not being recorded live at our online meeting in a change to the advertised fixtures. It's actually been recorded not at our weekly online meeting, but just at another time, and is instead part of our exciting new series called Cuppa 2040, which I've definitely not prepared enough for, and that will probably become apparent in the next, in this podcast, and indeed possibly in future podcasts. The idea of Cuppa 2040 is to take a deep dive look with friends and colleagues and thinkers of mine, who I think have an interesting perspective or a range of ideas, or just frankly well educated and well thought through, or not, in today's case, about the future. And I suppose to answer this rather simple question, what should we be investing in now so that we will then see the benefits for in 2040, hence the name. But for 2040, you can read the future. The reason that I was inspired to do this series of podcasts, for two reasons. One was the idea that if you can see the future, then that can make you a lot of money, right? Not only in terms of working out who's going to win the Grand National, and then betting on them, but also things like if you could see the future in the year 2000 and see, for example, things like the internet boom, the death of the shopping streets, high streets, that's what I'm after, or things like the rise in Bitcoin. That would have been a good investment in about 2009 10 11, wasn't it, whenever it was launched, at the moment. Then you could have done very well for yourself with almost very little effort, really. You could have sat around kicking disused cans and cartons down the road for about 19 of those years, put a few clever investments in, and been absolutely quids in come 2020. Well, as you're probably way ahead of me on here, my idea was to think what will we be saying in 2040, like, oh, we should have invested in that, or we should have avoided that. You know, a cup of coffee, as you'll all know, is a ostensibly a property group, and so that's our sort of tilt, our sort of starting point. But is it the case that maybe property might be a disaster in the next 20 years? Just for a disclaimer, I don't think so. But it might absolutely be the opinion of some of our speakers. So let's go. Speaking of speakers, today's guest is my good friend and colleague, mostly friend though, let's be honest, Mark Bailey. That's going to be bio for Mark. Mark's been a man. Mark's been a lecturer at various universities around the world. What do you do?
Yeah, so I'm a lecturer at University College London, and I work on a foundation program for international students. So, helping them to learn skills like how to do research, how to write essays. I also work on the economics module a little bit as well. So that's my bread and butter.
Yeah, and one thing that I like about Mark, other than his rapacious good looks, is that you got a very varied background, right? So you briefly, I don't think you mind me sharing, sort of traded in the city and obviously lived abroad and just got a fairly wide breadth of experience, as well as being, as far as I know, a fairly long time subscriber to magazines like Money Week and The Economist, which are, you know, got to give you a good grounding in all things cash.
yeah. So I suppose, yeah, I mean, going back to university days, so I studied finance economics university, then decided not to do that and picked up a backpack with Tom.
very wise.
Then we went to various places, didn't we? Mostly Southeast Asia and that part of the world. And that looks like a very nice lifestyle right now. I wish I was doing that right now.
Yeah, we should go back. That's our big takeaway for now, between now and 2040.
Yeah, I mean, thinking of like this this whole idea of Cuppa 2040, which to me sounds like a World Cup, but you know, if
is there going to be a World Cup in 2040? I can't work out the numbers. I think there will be, won't there?
Yes, there will, won't there?
There was one in 1990, wasn't there? So that would mean is there one in then in 2010?
No, actually, there's not a World Cup, is there? It's I'm thinking of the Olympics.
The Olympics, and there'll be a European Championship.
Yeah, it'd be Euros. Yeah. But yeah, I was thinking if we're going off topic in a way, so because we were talking about my bio, weren't we? But yeah, in those days when me and you went backpacking, that would have been 2001.
Yeah,
if we'd just took our student loans and bought ourselves a crappy little house somewhere and rented it out. That'd be worth quite a lot now, wouldn't it?
It would. And would I change it if I could do that? Absolutely not. Because then I wouldn't have had a year's fun and games around Southeast Asia. But it would have been financially a miles better decision. And maybe that's the other lesson to come out of this is don't worry about what you're doing with your money. Just have a good time. And you won't
We certainly invested in our life experiences, didn't we? But yeah, so going back to the original point of this was my bio, wasn't it? So I studied finance economics university. I spent a lot of time living in Japan. Teaching English mostly. Similar sort of path to you, isn't it? So, and I stayed a bit longer before you headed back. And then worked in the city for a little bit doing futures trading. That didn't really work out too well for a number of reasons.
The fact that you did futures trading and it didn't work out that well, and you're on here on our first podcast edition talking about the future and how to make it work well is inspired stuff in my
mind. Well, you'd be pleased to know I don't recommend buying any futures contracts. That's, that's not really.
That's straight out of the gate. That one's for free.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've had a casual interest in economics and investing and things for quite a long time. And, I've put my own money into a number of different things, including property, courtesy of Tom Dillon. Various other different bits of investment. So I guess you put me on here just because of a little bit of a jack of all trades and so far master of, I would say none, but
very few. I think you're mostly on there because you were available on what day are we on? Is it a Wednesday? What day is it? Tuesday afternoon. Funnily enough, I've sent, as you'd expect, I sent Mark sort of a brief pricey where we might go with this chat. So he's got a vague idea, but I'm immediately going to go off script because you mentioned you lived in Japan and that as did I, Mark's lived there longer than me. But so getting onto topic a little bit, if there is a topic, which is one of the fascinating things about Japan is it's got a dwindling population. The population is dwindling and aging quicker and in a more advanced fashion than most of those in Europe. But it's a problem which clearly I think a lot of European and North American governments especially have got a very close eye on because of the fact it's essentially Japan's going through now what we'll be going through 20 years from now with falls in fertility and an aging population and all the problems of paying for pensions and things that entails. What was your experience of living in Japan? Like, what did that teach you about that problem? Or put another way, I think that Japan has gotten one of the most amazing opportunities ever faced by humanity. Now, that's not what you'd think listening to the Japanese government, or indeed most people or governments who think it's it's a crisis, it's panic stations. You can totally understand why they'd say that. Because economic growth and the capitalist model is sort of critical to the whole thing, and if you've got only half the number of people, then your economy is pretty much halved in size, which is not good from a capitalist standpoint. But my contrarian view would be that it's amazing and they should really look at the upsides to this. What's your view?
Yeah, so Japan really is an interesting case study, isn't it? It's very unique, firstly, in the sense that it's one of the few, if not the only, sort of developed country you can go to, which is still has a really, really homogenous population. It is still 99% Japanese, ethnically Japanese, and also just people born there as well, just Japanese. Yeah. You don't really find that in other developed countries. And yeah, you're absolutely right. The demographic challenges are pretty well documented. I think probably a lot of people are well aware of that. And that's had some interesting effects. I mean, things that I noticed there. Firstly, as you could imagine, a sort of a national scale, given the falling population, things like property nationally has been considered to be a terrible investment for a long time. People buy properties in Japan with the expectation it will fall X number of percent. They don't expect any sort of growth whatsoever, do they?
Yeah, it's a bit like we'd buy a car.
Yeah, very similar. Very, very similar to that. If you dig under the surface, that's actually not the case. I mean, as you know, Tom, there are some cases in Japan where they're giving away property. The government's actually paying you to have property. And that's generally in rural areas where, most of the young people have left. They've gone to places like Tokyo, Osaka. So when you factor that into the national statistics, of course, property is going to be looking like it's going down a lot. But if you go and go into the urban areas, if you just took, say, fairly central Tokyo or somewhere like Osaka, you then get a much different picture, that property then looks very different there, because that's where the population's not falling. So demographic wise, yeah, I think there is certainly opportunities for things like that. Not sure how useful that is for the listeners to cover, because obviously Japan's not an easy market to get into. But I think the other sort of flip side to that is stocks, which we can invest in, and that, you know, there are obviously loads of different funds and trusts that anyone from the UK can invest in. And Japan's really interesting from that point of view too, that again, just, you know, probably a bit different than what you might read in various reports. When you go to Japan, there is a mentality that stocks are also a terrible investment, that, you know, from what, 1989, was it 1990, when their bubble burst, I think the high of 89 has just been taken out, hasn't it, in the Japanese stock market.
Yeah.
So it's taken like 30 odd years for stocks to regain their high. So for a very long time, you know, there are people now that have been 40 plus years old that have never experienced any kind of bull market in Japanese stocks. So they've grown up with this attitude that stocks or the stock market isn't a good investment. And they've grown up with the attitude that buying property isn't an investment. So everyone in Japan, say everyone, but, you know, the vast majority of people just have money in the bank as cash. And so far that's not worked out too bad. You know, they've not really had inflation. In fact, they've had mild deflation in some cases. So their capital has been preserved. But if we're thinking about Cuppa 2040 and you're looking ahead, you know, as general lessons, if you've got your money making pretty much 0% in the bank, as we are in the UK right now, then if inflation takes off, how's that going to work out for people?
Just as an aside, the government, I forget the right words for it, but the government, especially the new one, but following on from the previous one, there is has made changes, haven't they? Like, basically changed the way shareholdings work, sort of banned or reduced the amount of cross shareholding, so that they can't, big Japanese corporations can't prop each other up. And so you've actually got active shareholders for the first time in a long time, and actually decent return from the stock market. But by the way, I should probably say that so far this sounds like an advertisement for Japan and or the Japanese stock market. Nothing that me and Bailey, Mark, I call him Bailey, nothing that me and Bailey are talking about here is like, we're not on commission, we're not selling you anything, this is just some views and thoughts, and none of it constitutes advice either, especially financial advice. This is just our views and thoughts on various bits and pieces around the world. So on that topic, or topics, hey, thank you, that's the name of a Japanese market thing, I think. So anyway, that aside, what was I going to whisper about? So I like Japan, not to, because I'm interested in it and I do want some Japanese stocks, but I almost think of it's like, as I said at the start, as like a bellwether for what's coming in Europe. So let's imagine and I don't think it's as simple as this, it never is it? But let's imagine by 2040, we're looking at a European population. Is the European population falling? Obviously it is in some countries like Germany, Sweden, like most of Scandinavia in the UK, but I doubt, is it falling in, like, I was going to say Turkey, clearly that's a bad example as it's not part of Europe. But is it falling in some of the other nations, you know, your Czech Republics and your Slovenias? I just don't know.
Yeah, I'm really not sure. I think I just know it from the developed countries that it's not looking too good. It's certainly Italy and Germany in particular.
Yeah, sure. So Italy's surprising, wasn't it? Because isn't that predominantly a Catholic nation? You think they typically have slightly higher birth rates for?
Yeah. So you'll hang on a second. Yeah. So in terms of Europe, I'm not really sure too much about the demographics of different countries, but does seem to be a sort of developed world issue, doesn't it, in Europe? Whereas I think for Asia is also a sort of going off topic. They do have an upcoming demographic problem there, I think, that's coming up as well, don't they?
Yeah. Well, so you go, okay, so how can people, again, dragging us back to the topic here, how do people make a fortune out of that come 2040? You kind of go, I almost think that's, it's quite a long tail on it, hasn't it? As in, I'm not so sure that's going to make that much difference, especially when you factor off the other countries have got such high birth rates, and you think the pressure for migration, you know, you picture the poor people who've tried to get to Europe in all kinds of horrible ways and unfortunately not made it, or even the ones who have made it don't seem to be having a great time of it, by and large. So there's pressure from elsewhere, isn't it? So worldwide, maybe it's not that much of a big deal. Not that much of a big deal. It's a massive deal, but not as a big deal in terms of how you might make a fortune out of this this idea. But looking at the low population countries, I don't know. Like, it seems to me you've got to be thinking about what industries will benefit with that falling population. It seems to be something that most people don't give as much credence to. Like maybe this isn't UK. Maybe this doesn't apply to the UK because we have fairly high levels of net immigration, which kind of keeps our population steadily climbing, which is not the case in other countries.
I think it is important to think of sectors like that, isn't it? To think of it that way. You know, Japan was a good lead-in in that sense that you're right, that there's a number of factors there, aren't there, that are likely to happen here, if not already happened. So one is, you know, the aging population we're talking about now. The other is zero interest rates. Then there's a few things from Japan that might be relevant here. So, with that, you know, you can imagine that when you go to places like Japan, there's a lot of old people walking around. So obviously, from an industry point of view, there's so much tailored to that market, and it's the same here, isn't it? It's going that way, and even if we don't have an aging population in the same sense, there will be a lot of older people.
Yeah,
that, you know, the average life expectancy is going to go higher, isn't it? There's going to be a lot more in that sector, so you would expect things to do with sort of medical technology, anything to do with sort of retirement as well, you sort of expect to do pretty well. But certainly, that, you know, things to do with medical advancements, you'd certainly expect that should be an industry, a sector.
Yeah, those got a good future. Mobility scooters, hearing aids, and retirement property. If it was a property bent, you've got to imagine might be a very decent investment. Like bungalows, I was thinking, an amazing investment, not least because nobody wants to build them anymore because the land prices are so high as to make them uneconomic. So if you can get your hands on one, they tend to do really well, as do anything to do with the older people are likely to want to use. Okay, getting us changing direction a little bit. Well, maybe I'll keep it broad and just say, what do you think people should be in? We talked a little bit about this, but we should be investing in. What trends do you think are happening which people could use now to really benefit in 2040? By the way, this is the bit where in 20 years' time I play this back and you sound like an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously for me, if I think about investing, there's a number of sort of sectors I would consider. I would consider property, or consider stock markets, consider cash, commodities. I was going to say sort of hard assets. The sort of typical one would be gold. But there's obviously, you can be investing in things like oil or oil related ideas, and then the other sort of technology. And then, so I would sort of consider those are the areas to think about, sort of longer term. Property is an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, you know, obviously there's been a sort of boom, certainly. So there's certainly been a property boom in the UK. I think it's been similar in many other markets around the world, hasn't it? And that's, as we just said at the beginning of this, was if we'd bought something in the year 2000 or late 1990s, you know, interest rates were really high and people weren't considering property as a good investment, hence it was very low. So if you'd said to someone you were going to take your student loan and buy a house, no one would have said it was a good idea. But obviously now you look at it and think, wow, that would have been an amazing idea. Now it's different, though, isn't it? The mood is very different now. The attitude towards property is very different. Obviously prices have gone up in many places. Interest rates are now at rock bottom. So where does that leave us? Is now a great time to buy property? I mean, on the very long term, I'm sure it's fine. I don't know if the timing is particularly great. If we were looking to for stellar returns, it's probably not the area to start going into, I would say, which is controversial for the copper.
Dun, dun.
Although it is, as you know better than me, it's a micro market, isn't it? Even, you know, you say Manchester, right? Salford Quays and the Northern Quarter are not the same as, you know, going out towards Bolton or something like that. They're in really different markets. So property will always be a sort of micro market kind of atmosphere and environment, I would say. But just on a, I don't know, on a macro level, I'd probably say it's not the kind of thing that's going to, if you just picked any property on average and put money in it, I wouldn't have thought the value would rocket over the next 20 years, but that's my view.
The sort of what's the word, the metadata, that's far too fancy, the feeling, that's better, that I'm getting from magazines like Money Week and things is that inflation's probably coming, and with that it tends to be we get inflation, then governments panic and put interest rates up, seems to be the way it goes, and they always try and put interest rates up just not in, so there's always a little bit of inflation left over. They don't want to keep they want to keep inflation at 2% because they've got such massive debts. That's the only realistic way to reduce the real cost of those debts, is to reduce them through inflation. It seems to be what goes on, and that makes sense. I'm not saying I like it, but that seems to make some sense. But it seems like they've almost overdone it this time, to the point where they're running out of levers to pull. But and I'd welcome your thoughts on this. So, for example, if interest rates were to go up, because we're recording this about a week after the US has announced they're about to release stroke invent $1.9 trillion into the US economy, you keep doing that long enough or hard enough, and lots of countries, and it's not just the US, is it? Lots of countries do that, and then inflation rates, inflation followed by interest rates go up, prices, obviously, prices rise, so inflation is, and then what normally happens at that point is, well, then that's all fine, interest rates and inflation go up and the cycle continues. Problem is that you've got such massive debts now that the problem comes when governments can no longer afford to service those debts with any sort of inflation rate. And that's when, according to the sort of naysayers or the doomsayers or the, is it doves, or have I got that the wrong way around, that the whole system starts to collapse. Without telling everyone to stop digging for Anderson shells in their back garden, is that where you think we're headed? Do you think there's a problem?
Is there a problem? Well, I think so. Hopefully not a catastrophic problem, but it's obviously not ideal, is it? I mean, otherwise governments would have been doing this all the time with great results. But history, as far as I know, doesn't have an example of when governments have printed huge amounts of cash for a very long period and it's ended well. I've never come across an example like that. That's not to say that we can't position ourselves to do well from it, right? You're absolutely right. There's obviously huge amounts of money getting put into the world economy. Interest rates are very low. And you're right, that I don't see how governments can raise interest rates anytime soon. They might say they will, but I just can't see how that will happen, because it would cause so much damage to so many sectors. So, I guess, if you know, you have to position yourself for an inflationary environment, don't we? That's probably going to be the difference compared to the last 20 years. Going back 20 years ago, interest rates were significantly higher than this. You know, you'd be getting 5-6% in your bank account. I don't see that happening over the next 20 years. I think it's very much a case that cash is probably going to be the worst place to be. It seems to me that you want to put your money in some sort of real assets, whether that's property, whether that's precious metals, gold, etc., whether it's the stock market or commodity-based investments through the stock market, things like oil or raw materials. There's obviously loads of miners and things like that that would tick those boxes. But that looks like the sort of direction to preserve your capital, doesn't it? It looks like the governments would like to basically inflate away the debts that they're racking up now, which inevitably will affect the poorer people the most, and the poorer people generally have just cash. Then generally the wealthier people have assets. I see that as being the way it's going to go.
From my experience, like, if poor people have got cash, that's the best case scenario. Poor people I know haven't got any cash at all.
Well, maybe it'll work out well if they've got debts, you know, and it gets inflated away. That's probably a good thing for them.
It's a winner. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, well, that's the weird thing, isn't it? That lots of wealthy people I know have lots of debt. But the key question is, who's paying that debt off? And the answer is nearly always, with wealthy people, it says somebody else. with the obvious example of that being property, isn't it? Where you put a tenant in and the tenant, you have a debt on that property, but it's not you paying off the debt. It's your tenant.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think as well, I should probably clarify that, you know, I was saying before that, okay, like on a 20-year period, like buying property might not be it wouldn't be the same sort of returns as you'd had in the previous 20 years. But I do also think, though, as I just said there, with the inflationary environment coming in, it's certainly going to hold its value better than many things. I mean, it's a hard asset, isn't it? It's I don't see it entering any kind of bear market. But yeah, I think that for me, that's longer term, like holding real assets is looking like the area to be in.
Yeah, cool. Cool. Oh, that slipped out. Probably because I've known you for too long. So I forgot people were listening.
I'm not sure they are, Tom. I think you might be exaggerating your listener base here.
Everybody's listening. We get 6, sometimes 7 people tune into these. That does include us. So I want to come on in a minute to what maybe I'm worrying about now, because we've talked a little bit doom and gloom. So I want to talk about maybe what I'm worrying about now that I needn't worry about in the future. But before I do, I just wanted to pick up on a tiny point, which is you mentioned oil at least twice, and that's great. But oil, I'm a Save the Whale merchant, and oil doesn't get a great rep, obviously, and that's reflected in the market. So we've had crashes in oil prices and the well sort of a publicized rise in things like Tesla and electric cars and batteries and the end of internal combustion engines by 2030, I think, or is it now 2025 in the UK, production of new ones, that is. So just on the point of oil, you seem bullish on oil. For those who don't know what that means, it means he likes it. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it from an environmental point of view, obviously, but sure. Yeah, I think from an investment point of view, yeah, you're right, though, that obviously the companies like Tesla grab all the headlines. But yeah, there's that idea, that shift away from fossil fuels to renewables is obviously well underway. But I think that we should also bear in mind that the vast majority of the world is the developing world, and any sort of infrastructure development that's going on there is going to require a huge amount of oil. That if you want to build new roads, you want to build anything, yeah, you're going to need a lot of old-fashioned heavy industry to do that. So yeah, I agree, in the very long term, that's we hope fossil fuels will fade away, but in the next 20 years I don't see that happening, not on a global scale like that. You know, and also you bear in mind the sort of supply constraints that are around with that as well, that I think oil is going to hold its value, if not go up, more so than cash anyway. But I wouldn't sort of suggest that people go out and start buying barrels of oil to put in their garden. That's not really what I'm suggesting.
But from a safety point of view, as much as anything else, to be honest with you. I'm gonna redo our disclaimer at the end, because some of this has sounded troublingly like financial advice. I'll make sure we bookend it with the fact it's not.
But what I would say is, like, you know, excluding the ethical side of it, you know, just purely from a sort of financial point of view, I think things like energy companies will still be around. I think they will still be big firms in 20 years. That's my view on it.
Okay. So what am I worrying about now, which you don't think I'll be worrying about in 20 years, assuming that you know what I'm worrying about?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Bitcoin, that's an interesting one. We have to talk about Bitcoin.
We touch on crypto, yeah.
Yeah, because, well, I don't know what your view is on it, because I think you're more of a sort of pro cryptocurrency than I am. So my view is, this would be great to listen back to in the future, this, because obviously we've all been spectacularly wrong on some things.
One of us is about to look like a
real. Yeah, one of us is. Yeah. To me, crypto looks like a speculative bubble to me. The thing is, obviously, it's real money, right? I mean, enough people believe in it, so the value is going to go up.
Sure.
So you can make real money in it right now. But to me, I don't see the real value in it. Like, if I want to buy something, I can buy things online quite easily now. Or if I want to deal with foreign exchange, I can quite easily use Revolut or TransferWise, and I can send money around the world really easily right now. I can pay people in different countries, and it's really cheap. So I don't really see, like, where Bitcoin or any other crypto comes into it in a sort of actual practical use?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'd say like maybe I'm a bit more pro crypto, but I'm just interested in it more than I have any strong beliefs. I genuinely don't know. So I'm not taking any credit if it goes up. I'm not taking any credit if it goes down. But maybe that just makes me sound like I'm trying not to sound like a moron. I'm happy to sound like a moron on lots of things. Like I'm pretty pro property, for example. But which I suppose, given my line of work, isn't that much of a surprise. With crypto, the way someone, like, because I said that to somebody else on a similar thing, and I said, oh, there's nothing underneath it, is there? You know, if you buy some gold, you've got a gold coin. If you buy a house, you've got a house. If you buy crypto, you've got this kind of, there's a bit of code somewhere that says I own some asset that, you know, may or may not have some value, and it's got a value because we all say it does, and because there's basically a demand for it. And the person I was speaking to said, yeah, but how is that different from pounds or dollars or yen? As in, it's only got a value because we say it does, because it's backed by, the only difference is one's backed by central governments and one's backed by, you know, the cloud or the people, as it were. The other big difference, the key dip, well, two key differences after that, I suppose, for me anyway. One is that one's got a limited finite supply and one doesn't, hence Bitcoin shooting the moon, and dollars and other currencies not doing, or at least part of the story is that, I think. And then the other part is, I don't think it was a currency. So you said, you know, we can all go on Amazon and or wherever, and other retailers are available, and spend £10 and get more. That's whatever the hell we want, very easily. And crypto doesn't do that. At least I don't think it ever will, unless they revolutionize the tech that the blockchain that underlies it, because it takes so much energy. Right now, cryptocurrency takes up the same amount of energy as Argentina, which isn't sustainable long term either. So it's not like crypto is perfect in any way. Having said that, Visa and MasterCard combined take up more than the energy of Argentina. So one should put these things in context. So that's my understanding anyway. So, but it's not a currency. But like, what's the difference between crypto? Like, it's mythical. Nothing happens. It doesn't exist. Well, neither does a pound, does it?
Yeah. Well, I think I don't know if the pounds are such a great comparison, because you're obviously comparing fiat mm-hmm. currency with crypto, which it's a bit different. I mean, there's different ways to consider it, isn't there? I mean, as a store of value, which I guess is what you're alluding to, it's not really like a comparison with gold. Obviously, it's been compared to gold many times, digital gold, etc. But why not just buy gold then? If you want to just store your value in a finite resource, why not buy gold and silver? Why suddenly everyone would clamor to buy an algorithm? What does it do differently than that? So I don't really see what it does that's not already available. So I can see the value is going up because everyone's jumping onto it. So that's, you're right. If enough people believe it, then it will go up and it will stay up. But I don't know. I'm skeptical, because firstly, there's so many different cryptos out there, aren't there? Bitcoin's the most famous one, but there's literally hundreds of thousands. Yeah. There's so many. So they can't all do well, can they?
Plenty of them have already gone to zero. Yeah,
I wouldn't have thought so. So I don't know. I mean, this would be a great one to look back on in 10, 20 years. Like, is it tulip mania? Does it have some real substance to it? Certainly blockchain technology is going to be a winner. I'm pretty confident of that. But I don't know. I just can't imagine anyone using Bitcoins for anything.
No, I think that you make an excellent point, like which is the point of these podcasts, isn't it? It's that's up to my game in that you said, well, look, if we need some sort of store of value, we've already got one, in the sense of like a finite supply of something, you know, namely the metals, gold, silver, and the like. And that's a good point, one I hadn't really considered. You know, what's wrong? What's broken about the current system? Why do we need this new thing if it's not going to be really easily tradable? Because gold and silver, the problem is, you know, illiquidity. But then that's currently the problem with all crypto, is it's quite hard to buy and sell, takes time and you know, yeah, each transaction costs like quite a few dollars in energy costs, apart from anything else.
One final point on that. I just think, but I don't think anyone's really buying crypto, at least not unless you're Elon Musk. Most people are basically aren't buying crypto because they think, you know, I'm a bit concerned about my value of my money being eroded away by inflation. I think they're looking at it thinking, holy crap, I can make 8,000% returns on this. And I think that's what, for me, that's why I think most people are buying crypto for that reason, aren't they?
Okay.
Yeah, that's how it looks to me anyway.
Yeah, no, fair enough. That's probably why I've bought a tiny amount to get myself in the game and make a fortune, you know, in a weekend.
But yeah, I wish I'd put 10 grand into it in 2010, though.
Yeah, Yeah.
I wouldn't be doing this podcast, would I? Or if I was, I'd be in the British Virgin Islands.
You have a very different background for those.
Yeah, yeah.
But just me, you can see your background. A mutual friend of ours very, very nearly bought, and he's the kind of guy, you know, he's a trustworthy bloke. He's not just saying this. Very, very nearly bought £10,000 worth of crypto in 2010. And at the time of recording, or about a week ago when I checked, that would have been worth £5 billion. So that would have been a good investment of 10 grand. So speaking of crazy investments, and as a final thought, so we'll wrap things up. Have you got any tips like that? What's my 10 grand that I can invest now? Where in 2040 I'll be 5 billion to the good.
Yeah, I don't have a tip on that, I'm afraid. I wish I did. I really wish I did. What's going to make you 10,000% return?
Well, if there's nothing like that, which by the way is fair enough. Like if anyone knew that, they'd, as you say, you wouldn't be on this podcast, would you? But what thoughts do you have, or maybe what thoughts do you have, if you're not a tip, then things that you think people should be looking out for, maybe skilling themselves up on, or a little nugget to leave us with?
I don't see a clear area that could boom, to be honest, because so many things are so high at the moment, aren't they, that for me I think the next 20 years is more about probably preserving that, isn't it?
You're in good company, because like Warren Buffett basically agrees with your view that Bitcoin speculation or crypto speculation, and thinks that, you know, the main thing with in terms of wealth is preserving it rather than worrying about increasing it. So you're in good company.
Well, I think so. In the case of inflation, I mean, you never know, but obviously things can, with when there's so much cash sloshing around, there's certain things could go bananas. Like right now, crypto, I think stock markets have done really well, haven't they, as well over the last year, which in some ways is a little bit illogical. But yeah, I think certainly you don't want to have a lot of cash going forward. I think probably stock markets look a lot better than, say, government bonds, because again, they've had like a 30-year bull run, been doing well for 30 years. So, and then property, as we said, I don't see how that can have like a massive boom going from now. I mean, obviously some sectors, maybe it can, but generally speaking, I don't really see how that could do it. So I don't know. I think of all the different issues, all the different areas I can think of, it stock markets look about the best bet.
Yeah. So the message here is build a life raft and hold on for the next 20 years to grim death, to try and things that are connect- what you can.
Yeah, things that are connected to hard assets, probably via the stock market would be my preferred route. But yeah, nothing groundbreaking, I'm afraid. I don't have any sort of new Bitcoin tips.
Well, that's all right. You know, in many ways, that's good, because if you did, it would make it sound even more like we're doing some sort of sales thing, which we're not. So let's take this opportunity to thank our speaker today, Mr. Mark Bailey, or our conversation partner. And our conversation partner, sounds like we're all getting 10% of a conversation, doesn't it?
Sounds like one of our old English conversation cafes in Japan. Come and speak to Mark. He's your conversation partner for today.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be here, but he is. Well, it's a bit like today. So I'd like to thank Mark, and we'll if I can wheedle some out of him, I'll post some contact details in the box, although with the podcast, that is. But I'm not exactly sure why you'd want to speak to Mark, but if you do, then you'll have that opportunity. And we should probably take this opportunity to say that, just to stress the point, that none of this constitutes financial advice, and it's just a chat between a couple of hopefully interesting people. This has been a Cuppa 2040 production for Cuppa Coffee Podcasts Limited, which I may form in the future. I hope you've enjoyed today's chat, and we'll have more of these coming up, which you can either try and tune into or avoid, depending how you've enjoyed this one, coming up over the few weeks, the upcoming weeks and months, which we'll release as and when we think it's an interesting time to do it. Thanks you all very much for listening, and see you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Tom. How am I getting paid for this, by the way?
We'll talk about it later.